What's going on, everybody? We are back. This is episode 227 of the Dark Windows podcast, and for some reason, Kevin has a fucking knife.
That's not a knife.
It is.
That's a knife.
Yeah, the imaginary one you pulled.
Yeah.
No, that's my little wood carving knife.
I know.
And so if you want to play the That's a Knife game, I will open the safe and we can play That's a Knife, because I got some That's a Knives in there. A couple of them.
I bet you this might be...
That bitch is sharp.
Sharper than most of those.
No, I had my brother take the... my brother sharpened my K-bar. I could shave with it if I wanted to.
This should be sharper just because it's whittling.
Yeah, but I use it for cutting up wood and stuff, so you lose the edge pretty quick.
What are you cutting up? Well, I mean, yeah.
That's kind of what it's used for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but
it dulls.
I stop. Hey, by the way, I'm Kevin.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just started rambling at the beginning of the
podcast.
We did,
because you pulled a fucking knife on me
and
in
you
my
know,
own home.
You know, somebody's going to be like, oh, motherfuckers, just get on with it. Come on.
First of all, we had a really, really fun one on Instagram today that I basically told the guy to eat dicks. Said something to the effect of, your podcast is unlistenable. And I responded back, okay, so don't. Then I posted it on Facebook, and people have just been fucking shredding them. So if you're on the Facebook page, go over and enjoy the fun, because I like picking on people that that dislike what we do for free. So, and like, here's the thing. He commented on a post for a Patreon episode upload on Instagram. I'm pretty sure this dude doesn't fucking, you know, patronize our Patreon. Would be the best way to put it, because we got like 7 people on there and he doesn't look familiar. So
we could figure it out.
Yeah. You want to go, if you want to like say that our show's unlistenable, at least say it about one that you could have fucking listened to without paying us, you idiot.
And please pay $5 to listen to it.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus, at least you could do.
I don't know. I'll tell him he's an asshole for free right now. So,
oh, wow. Well,
so anyway,
I want to add money out of this deal. So,
well,
honestly, I mean, just
so
go pay me $5.
All you have to do if you want to hear us call this guy an asshole is just listen to the ads that we put in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the best way to help us if you don't want to get on Patreon. So anyway, speaking of assholes, we're gonna get back into Danny Green. So last week we ended with him setting up a little bit of a raffle, which wasn't really a raffle because it was just him collecting money from people in his union that were selling tickets to people that they knew to raffle off a car, which didn't exist.
Okay.
So
I'm going to have it. Last week seemed like forever ago. So I'm going to have to get out. Like, can you give a little bit of a refresher just
yeah.
so I'm caught back up?
So basically he met this like cute girl at a bar that he decided he wanted to quote unquote hire to be his quote-unquote secretary, right?
Oh, quote-unquote.
And she drove a piece-of-shit car, and he decided, you know, I can't have a girl that looks like this driving around in a, you know, whatever the fucking 1964 equivalent of a Ford Pinto was. Maybe a Yugo? Yeah, you can't be driving around in a piece-of-shit. So he gave her the company car, which was this, like, giant green Caddy, right?
Okay.
And then he said that what he's going to do is he had a bunch of raffle tickets made up. And everybody in the union was given $5 of tickets. The exact quote he had was attached to each, you know, the books of tickets was, you've been issued $5 of tickets for which you are responsible, regardless of whether you sell them or not. The face value of the tickets is $30 per book. So basically, you owed him $30 per book for these tickets, whether you sold them or not or threw them in the trash or whatever. He was getting that money from you.
Okay.
One way or the other. Yep. To raffle off this car, which has already been given to somebody else. So that money is going into the Danny Green Retirement Fund.
Of course.
So,
I mean, that's what you do, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're a scumbag union leader, like union boss, yeah, that's what you do.
Or you own a ski resort.
Which one was that?
Up in Jay Peak.
Oh, yeah. People with money do some shady shit.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Oh yeah,
but when you start thinking about unions, you automatically go, "Oh, there's some like shiftiness going on here. There has to be."
But the thing is that, I mean, they weren't always like that.
No, but for the most part, they have been for a long time.
Yeah, well, I think it started in the '70s.
Oh no, it started before that. It started like back in the 50s, where it got real, real shifty and shady. Actually, no, it was probably even earlier than that, because On the Waterfront set in like the 40s, and that was about shadiness at the docks with the unions and stuff. So basically, it all started with Tammany Hall, because basically there was a political union.
Yeah,
yeah.
Those fuckers. What the fuck were their names?
People think Boss Tweed.
Yeah.
Yeah. People think politics are corrupt now. Son of a bitch.
No fucking way.
Oh man.
I mean, when you have a guy that's the richest man in the world, be like. I know you're broke and everything to the United States, because the United States comes to him like,
yeah.
Hey man, can we borrow some money? And he's like, listen, I'll do it for you, but it's going to be at a cost.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
But then you also
shit.
You also have families that back both sides of wars and have for all time, and then just collect shitloads of money off of them.
Well, yeah.
You know? Yeah. So anyway, before we get deleted by a fucking Rothschild assassin, so after the raffle is all said and over,
or we get given another one star.
Because that's how the fucking New World Order is going to take us down with one star reviews.
Hey, they could. Okay,
yeah, that's what George Bush Sr. was warning us about, was one star reviews this whole time. Yeah. The fucking podcast industrial complex is going to collapse around us.
Sons of bitches. We'll take them out.
Well, he's dead, so we don't have to worry about him.
All right. Well, Junior, then.
Yeah. So, Jesus. So, Danny, like we said, okay, so first of all, if you've made it this far and have figured out that you are in part two, you need to go back and listen to last week. It's just not going to make sense going forward from here, but... it goes without saying, Danny Green, not a huge fan of the Italians. Big time, not really they're not buddies. Well, they are, but business buddies. He wouldn't, like, go hang out with them and...
He's
not going to go to a fucking cannoli barbecue with these guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're friends, but, you know...
Friends with benefits.
Mm.
Yeah, because everybody benefits. It's just nobody's getting laid.
It's true.
So he gets... You know, he gets back out to his newfound kind of running buddies that are all mobbed up. And one guy he starts getting in tight with was a guy by the name of Junior Short. Who?
Was he short?
He's also not Italian, but he's
like
the... I didn't
ask if he was Italian. I just asked if he was short.
Short's not an Italian name, though. That's what I'm getting at.
But I didn't ask if he was Italian.
I don't know if he was fucking short. I don't know. Dude, I Google mapped, like, the locations of these places. I didn't look at this guy's fucking genealogy reports. I don't know how tall he was.
You should have.
You know what I do know, though, is he was basically the stereotypical, like, movie mobster.
Ah. You know,
chewing on cigars, fucking, like, the cheap suits, just generally looking like a scumbag. But he also kept a sawed-off 12-gauge in his top desk drawer.
Uh-huh.
And he had a 22 automatic that went in every jacket pocket that he put on, you know, because a 22 is a fantastic round.
Uh-huh.
Not personally what I would choose for, you know, personal defense. At this point in time, I'd be like, I want a 38 or something, a little bit more ass behind it.
That 22, though, you shoot somebody, the bullet don't come out.
Yeah.
If it's in the head.
If you hit them on the right angle and it doesn't bounce off their skull. Because it will. If you get them on a weird angle, it'll just go under the skin and fucking shoot out through, and it just sucks, but...
Yeah, but if you get it so it goes in, and then it goes ting, ting, ting,
yeah,
ting, ting.
Yeah, but you have to get it to do that.
Well,
I mean, I'd rather just take take my chances with a 38 and just plug him in the chest and run away if I had to.
I mean...
You know.
I'll just do the 45. Fuck it.
So, Danny had a lot of meetings with him, like, kind of all over town, including in Short's home. But while they're out and about, Danny ran into and became friends with the most Italian man that's ever existed, Nunzio Trescaro.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't make that name up either. So he's the head of the local 436 Excavation Drivers Union. Of course he is.
This is quote-unquote.
Yeah, he's air quotes the head of the union.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, due to all of his connections, Trescaro basically feels like he's untouchable, and he kind of is, because he's the second biggest head of a union that's under the umbrella of the Teamsters Union in the entire state of Ohio. Would you like to take a guess who the most powerful union member in the state of Ohio was ahead of him? Kind of a big name when it comes to union stuff.
I don't know.
Kind of a big name when it comes to unsolved mystery kind of shit. Even though I've read a book of a guy that claims he knows exactly where he is and what happened to him. Fucking Jimmy Hoffa.
But this point, was in New York City.
No, he was in Ohio.
But Hoffa was in...
He was based out of Ohio, but he was the national head of the Teamsters Union.
I thought he was based out of Ohio.
Yes, he was.
I mean, out of New York City.
He's based out of Ohio. He's in, like, Cincinnati.
Okay, because...
He was in New York City when he disappeared, because he was there for a big union conference kind of thing, and he was never seen again after that, which is why so many people think he's under the fucking whatever five-yard line or whatever it was of Giant Stadium, he's under the mound of Shea Stadium, or... He was potentially stabbed in the back of the head multiple times with an ice pick and then put in a large steel barrel and then buried and then dug back up and sold as scrap metal to Toyota. Very specific, because like I said, read the book of a guy that said he did it, so.
Or he's in the fucking river, you know.
No, they would have found him if they threw him in the river.
They probably didn't dredge the river to find him.
Oh, of course they did. Dude, people have been looking for Jimmy Hoffa since he fucking disappeared. Like, everybody. The FBI was looking for him. Like, every fucking local agency that could get their hands on anything, they were all looking for him. There's still people looking for him. I mean, even if he was still alive, he'd be dead. You know what I mean?
Well, he pissed off the Italians.
See, that doesn't make any sense, but you listen to how I said it, it kind of does. So there's a lot of, like, old-school FBI files that have kind of fingered him as the missing link between the unions and the underworld in Ohio for this Triscaro guy. So he had a kind of a neat little side business that caught Danny's attention. He owned a day labor company that worked on the same kind of, like, that old ship-up model of work where you show up, you get handpicked. Mm-hmm. You have a better chance of being handpicked to work if you're willing to cough up, like, 15% of your pay back to the big guy. To work. So when Danny needed extra guys for this, like the 1317, like if they had a lot of ships coming in or guys are being sent to other docks or whatever, he'd call Triscaro and he'd send as many guys to Danny as he wanted. These guys would have to pay, quote, a daily work fee, which Danny and Triscaro would split in some fashion. I'm assuming probably like a 60-40 kind of split, you know, split thing here.
And it's probably 40 Danny.
Yeah, because Triscaro's fucking facilitating the entire thing. Yeah. You know? So he's getting a bigger cut of whatever. Then Danny meets a guy that would alter his life forever. His name is John Nardi. Nardi was family to some of the big name mobsters in Cleveland. And in his mind, this gives him the right to basically lean on whoever he wants and try to muscle in on whatever he wants to do, you know? So by the age of 23, Nardi's got he's kind of a big name for the Cleveland Vending Machine Union. There's a goddamn union for everything. It doesn't matter what business you're in. There is a union for it.
Okay.
Because that's how the shit works. Huh? I mean, you got dock workers, you have different dock workers. You've got stevedores, which are like working on the ports and stuff. Then you have the dock workers union, which are guys loading trucks. You've got the Teamsters, which are the guys driving the trucks.
Yeah.
You got a union for everything. You got a union for guys fucking putting toilet paper back on the rolls, you know, back in the things in the bathrooms. There's a janitor's union. There's a union for everything. You know, there's a fucking teacher's union. There's all of it. And yes, it's just as goddamn corrupt as the rest of them. So to show that he's, you know, he's big bad man, he goes into a bar where the owner had machines that were being serviced. They're being serviced by non-union repairmen, which that is unacceptable. So after trying to explain to the owner of the bar, who is a recent immigrant from Italy, trying to tell him, you know, the U.S. has unions to handle this stuff. You call them, they can pick it up, they fix it, they bring it back to you. you don't have to worry about finding an outside source to do it. We'll do it for you.
Of course.
So Nardi then produces a blackjack and explains to him one more time how unions work. And the guy said, no, that's okay. And he beat the shit out of him. So fun story, the bar's owner, his wife was an Irish-American woman who just so happened to be the cousin of a police officer.
Okay.
In Cleveland. So he took the story to the guy, and the officer was like, okay, well, this seems a little out of my league. I'm going to run it up the flagpole because there's a guy local that's better at handling shit like this. And that's Elliot fucking Ness. We will definitely be doing an Elliot Ness episode at some point because he was a bad motherfucker. So Elliot Ness kind of has taken down some of the most important gangsters in the area. And fucking this Nardi guy, you know, he's nobody, but
in the Midwest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause he took down Al Capone.
Yeah. Exactly. Al Capone, fucking couple of other big names that were with Capone. He didn't care. He was going to whoop Nardi's ass just on principle of him being a gangster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So much to his surprise, Ness, within a few days of bringing Nardi in and actually having him put in jail, was there as Nardi was being cut loose with no criminal charges. So this was kind of one of the last two straws that kind of broke the camel's back when it came to Elliot Ness's career. And they both took place in Cleveland because you had this and the Cleveland Torso murders.
Yeah.
That he couldn't solve those. And then all this shit's going on. And he just went, fuck it. I'm done. I quit. So this was one of the last cases that he worked was this guy. So after a career of seeing just bullshit release, you know, whatever, I just said all that without actually reading it. So after the whole debacle there, he left town, went to Washington, D.C., did some stuff there, and he died not too long after that. So he had a fantastic career, but this was just the last, like, seeing how corrupt shit was. He was just like, I'm done. I'm sick of this shit. You know, I'm sick of it. I can't do this anymore if I'm the only one that's not dirty.
Yeah.
You know? And he was, for the most part.
So I mean, if the Untouchables was anything to believe, you know, if that was based off of any kind of truth, you know, you see that corruption.
So, to me, the old-timey, like, G-Men were a lot like...
Well, I'm not talking about G-Men. I'm talking about, like, the cops and stuff, how he, you know, if the Untouchables was anything to be believed... The cops in Chicago
were corrupt as
a motherfucker.
Yeah,
and the G-Man, you know, Ness, kind of had to figure out something to work around that corruption.
Right, but where I was going with that is like the old time G-Men, kind of they kind of are in the same ballpark as like Old West law enforcement, where you have to be almost as dirty as the guys you're after to be able to get to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's a fine line between being a good guy and being a bad guy. And you have to be very good at walking that line to get the bad guys.
What was Sean Connery's line in the movie? If they're going to bust one kneecap, you got to bust like five or whatever the fuck the line was, you know,
put one of ours in the hospital. We put one of yours in the morgue.
Yeah.
That was The Godfather. But yeah, the one I just used was.
Yeah,
they did to my boy.
Yeah, but there's like
killed the second most useless Corleone brother. Sonny was a shitbag.
He wasn't useless though.
He was a shitbag.
No,
Fredo was a shitbag. Michael was the only good one.
Fredo was a shitbag, definitely for sure. He was a puss. Yeah. But Sonny, he wasn't a shitbag. I mean, look what the fuck he did with his sister. You know, the fucking guy beat the shit out of his sister.
No,
he's like, you fucking touched my sister. I told you.
I'm saying, I'm putting him in the category of shitbag for the point that he was basically useless.
No, he wasn't.
No. What'd he do?
He didn't get to basically get off the ground. I mean, you know, he tried to help his pop, you know. And, you know, I mean,
Michael was the only good one. Yeah, but that's why he was.
But he knew that, like, if he went to the meeting, you know, or went to that meeting where, like, hey, you know, you got to go to the meeting or whatever. And he's like, no, I don't.
Take my shitter pistol.
You know, Michael was like, okay, I'll go. You know, but, I mean, they all knew that because the reason why Sonny got taken out was because they knew that Sonny set it up. So they fucking whacked Sonny.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah, he wasn't important, though. That's what I'm saying. He wasn't important to the story. Because he was the, like, Michael is the main fucking character for the most part. So you have to kill that one, so you're like, eh, whatever. Well, cause Michael and Fredo was just a piece of shit.
Michael was the baby.
Fredo was a piece of shit, that little worm.
Because Fredo was...
Look at the flowers, Fredo.
Fredo was, what, middle child? Middle? Well, he wasn't the baby. Michael wasn't the baby. He was,
I don't know.
The daughter was the baby.
They don't count. Women in mafia movies don't count.
It's true.
Look at fucking Karen Hill. Like, what'd she do? She got slapped around a bunch. But pull a knife on me in my own house? A gun, sorry. Goodfellas is a great fucking movie. I want to go to Italian prison. Like, watching that guy slice garlic with the razor blade.
Hey, according to...
But according to my genealogy, I have to go to, like, partially Spanish prison, which sounds awful. Cool. Like, you'd get diarrhea. But I don't know.
According to, like, some of the stuff on, if you watch any of those like ghost shows or whatever, they'll have stuff with Capone and whatever. He was in prison. They're like different places, and they were talking about how, you know, he had this or this in prison, and I mean,
but like not to that extent.
He was set up.
No, I'm saying like not to the extent like it was in the movie where he basically had a penthouse suite in the prison.
No, he did.
What I'm saying is that's not accurate for that time frame for Goodfellas, like in the 70s and 80s. You know, it's just, that was not how it worked.
No, but I'm
saying back when Capone was in jail, yes, because he owned everybody in the prison.
Well, yeah,
you know. So we'll jump back to 1964. Danny Green at this point is at the top, on top of his game. Like, this is where. Another show that I listened to, Crime and Sports, here's where they would call Grace. Like, because he's fucking top dog. He's doing this. He's got everything going for him. And he can only go one direction from here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not further up.
It's down.
Exactly. So one of the guys that was close to Danny would tell Rick Perrello in an interview. So remember the name Rick Perrello. It's going to come up a few more times. Quote, he'd bring four or five of us to the theatrical and pick up the check. He had portraits of all the officers that he put in nice frames. He'd attend district conferences in Detroit or Milwaukee, and he bought himself a green caddy. Fucking shocker. All paid for by the local.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this money that his union's making, he's just fucking spending it on whatever he wants.
Yeah. Because,
you know, it's his money, right? So with all this money going out, obviously, Danny needs to have some coming back in. So he had a good scheme set up for just such an occasion with an unexpected partner, we'll say. He arranged a deal with Sherwin-Williams and the International Milling Company, known for making super expensive paint and paper products, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
Like International Paper, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Sherwin-Williams, you know, they got the weird-ass logo covering the world in this red paint. And
mm-hmm.
Fucking... eat my balls, fucking $55 a gallon. Fuck you, I'll go to Home Depot, thanks. Expensive fucks. So basically, this deal was to have all of their ingredients, components, whatever, loaded and unloaded by his ILA guys on the Ohio docks. Because a lot of the components came from the surrounding area, and they would go into Ohio because that's where Sherwin-Williams was based out of at the time.
Okay.
So everything went through Danny. Danny pocketed, quote, a finder's fee of $25,000, and the SW and IMC, which was the corporation name, would pay the salaries of the longshoremen for the loading and unloading. So they're paying these guys that are already being paid, and then Danny's taking a cut of their pay also. So Danny's about to meet another man that would become very important to his future, which is FBI agent Martin McCann. And McCann called him to a meeting at a little Irish pub out in Akron. nothing important has ever happened in Akron, Ohio. I'm pretty confident. Well, LeBron James, he's a flop artist. He can eat dicks. Michael Jordan's better. So when he gets there, Danny kind of sits in his car and scopes the place out for a while. Because when you're in the situation that he's in, and you get a phone call from some guy, and the first things that are out of his mouth are, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so with the FBI. You kind of watch your back. Because illegal shit and the government don't mix unless it's the government doing illegal shit. Yeah. Then it's fine. So he sat in his car for like 15, 20 minutes and just scoped the place out. He could see him through the window.
Well, it means fine until the government gets caught doing illegal shit.
Who stops him then? Nobody.
The government stops themselves.
Yeah. Randy Weaver. Yeah. We're going to, hey, how would, hey, you know, you don't know that I'm an undercover ATF agent. How would you feel about sawing a shotgun barrel down half an inch too short so I can make it a felony? And then I can kill your wife, your dog, and you know, shoot a bunch of your family. Sound good? Sweet. Let's do it. Ruby Ridge was a fucking joke. So he watched this guy for a while because he kind of knew, cause obviously he's got people. He knows what this guy looks like. He's you know. So he makes sure that he's by himself. He sits there for a while and makes sure that he is only one there by himself.
Yep.
So then he kind of, he heads in and he finds McCann and sits down and they just start drinking, making some small talk about, you know, obviously their shared Irishness because that's the most common thing that they're going to talk about.
No. Okay, I got to stop you.
Yes.
The question just popped in my brain and I had to, I think you should probably know this, but, you know, with this so far. Is he hasn't, because we haven't talked about this, he hasn't made it onto the radar of the FBI at this point for his shenanigans.
That's kind of why he's here now.
Okay. I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
No, you're not jumping the gun at all. Because that's why he's been contacted, is because they're like, so you're doing some shady shit, but, you know. So the meaning of the meeting finally comes out, and McCann just basically says, I didn't tell you this before, but I'm part of the organized crime division with the FBI. And if you have any information that you're willing to part with on your Mediterranean friends, we'll pay you for it. So this is where Danny Green becomes a rat for the FBI, because right about here, he makes it very, very clear that he wants nothing to do with putting Irish criminals in jail. He says, you find out what you can about men like John Scalish, who was the mobster in Cleveland. He was the fucking boss.
Yep.
And we'll look the other way when it comes to the petty stuff that's going on at the docks with you and your local union. Danny sees this as a win-win, okay? FBI was going to leave him alone. They might take a couple Italians off the board. Win-win. Everybody's happy, except for the Italians. So a big driving force behind this whole mission that's going on here is FBI director and fishnet enthusiast J. Edgar Hoover. And he wanted to put as much of the, quote, Italian mafia in prison as possible. He didn't give a fuck if the Irish were doing illegal shit, too. He wanted the Italians in jail, because they've been the problem for the longest.
Hoover's still in...
Yeah, Hoover was still the FBI director at this point in 64.
Okay.
And yes, he was probably in pantyhose and heels while he put the order out.
Old man at this point.
Doesn't matter. A kink is a kink.
No, I'm just saying he's pretty much an old...
Yeah, he's got to be in his late 50s, early 60s at this point, I would think.
Something close, because...
Well, let's find out.
Because... yeah, something like that, yeah.
Who the fuck is J. Cole? Ugh, okay.
What?
I'm assuming... I punched in, when was J, and I get J. Cole born. I don't know who the fuck this guy is.
Okay.
He was born. Oh Jesus! He was born in 1895. So
yeah,
he's an old fella at this point. But you know, he's still just out there rocking his fucking his pumps or whatever. Because
he's 69.
Nice. Anyway.
Well, because, I mean, you know, 64, add five more years.
Never mind.
So, 69.
So, how this whole thing is going to work is Danny's going to keep up his routine. He's going to keep hanging out in the bars and nightclubs, rubbing elbows with the Cleveland's Italian underworld, and McCann would let him know when any kind of investigation was headed his way on the docks. Any FBI involvement, like talking, where Danny Green was the subject of the talk, he would be referred to as Mr. Patrick, which was, of course, Danny's suggestion because of, you know, St. Patrick and, you know, the, going to come as a surprise, the Italian priest of Irish mythology. So I wonder if he realized that St. Patrick was actually Italian. That probably would have pissed him right off.
I'm sorry. My brain kind of went to something else. I was just thinking back to Hoover.
The tism kicked in. It's fine. It happens to all of us.
The Hoover's boss at the time was the fucking King Corruption himself. Probably had, you know, his president whacked. Well, Lyndon B. Johnson.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a giant heap of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Wait, wasn't he president? Yeah, he was president at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 64 because JFK was killed in 63. Okay.
Yeah, he took over.
Yeah. Then he got us right square into Vietnam, too, because fucking why not?
Yeah.
You know, it was the plan all along.
Well, because, I mean, those fucking, you know, those goddamn French couldn't do the job, so.
So we had to send American boys to die in the jungle on the other side of the world.
Well, yeah. I mean.
Full Metal Jacket.
It's just how it goes.
Wanted to be the first boy on my block to go to a foreign land, meet the people, and kill someone. So things are starting to, you know, things are really looking good here. Danny's in a great spot, right?
Yeah.
And the name from last week resurfaces, just fucking rears his ugly Scandinavian head of sorts. Sigvald Refnes, our buddy from last week, our fucking one-legged Dutchman or whatever the fuck he is. So he comes back into the picture. He's hearing a lot of talk from unemployed longshoremen, probably hanging out at the bar and, you know, shooting the shit with boys that he used to work with. And They didn't like him, but they'd still talk to him. And he starts hearing about the scams and scams and schemes of Danny Green. Turns out Sigvald's wife, Faith Corrigan, was a journalist for The Plain Dealer, which was a pretty good-sized newspaper outlet in Cleveland.
Okay.
So she writes a letter to her editor that would end up making its way into the book Kill the Irishman that Rick Perello wrote. And the letter goes something like this. On the docks here in Cleveland, which warrant investigation, a company called Best Labor Services, Inc., with offices at 3030 Woodland Avenue, supplies longshoremen to the stevedore companies. The men are hired daily since the requirements for their services are according to work. 21 day, 50 the next, so on and so forth. They're paid by the stevedoring firms, the regular longshoreman's rate, which I believe to be close to $3 an hour, which was good money back then. Good $3 an hour in the early 60s, not too shabby. Mm.
Well, you could feed your family. I mean,
right.
That wasn't, you know, you could feed your family off of that.
Yeah. However, the checks are delivered by an agent of Best Labor, which is entitled to cash them. The workers get $1.25 an hour, of which 17 cents is charged to labor. So they make a little less than half of what they're supposed to be making, and then you knock another 17 cents off as a labor charge for cashing the check. So these guys are getting fucked.
Yeah.
And Danny is the one just sweating behind him, dick in hand, about ready to do it.
And, you know, the funny thing is about price, you know, price per hour, you know, payment per hour. 64 to when I started working in 96, 97. Fucking, it only went up by like a little over $2 because I was making five something an hour.
My first paycheck, I made $6.73 an hour, which was minimum wage. But now minimum wage in our wonderful state is what, almost 14 an hour, something like that, because you have to have that to be able to not fucking die here, because this state sucks ass.
You can't, you're still fucking going to the going. No, you're not surviving off of $14.
No, but
hour.
They don't. They, you know,
because you $14 an hour, you're gonna go fucking, you're gonna go get stuff at the food shelter and yeah. You know, food, you know, all that stuff because you can't fucking make it. You yeah. know, I mean, I almost had to because.
But then you've got states down south where you can make $14 an hour and you're fine.
You know, almost to fine.
You know, you might not have like extra money to you know, hop on patreon.com and go to Dark Windows Podcast and give us $5 a month, but you're doing all right.
Good plug.
You know? So to finish out the quote here, the rest goes to best labor. The workers are mostly Negroes, many illiterate and falling under the category of quote, moving meat. They have no idea how much money they are really entitled to and that the papers they sign give best labor the right to an exorbitant fee. Cleveland Stevedore has a contract with the union to get all the labor through the union, and the rumor on the docks is that Danny Green, the ILA head, is behind Best Labor Service since the workers are union members. On the books, Green gets paid $6,000 a year salary from the union, but he drives a brand new Cadillac automobile and displays other material forms of his wealth.
Well, $6,000 a fucking year, not shabby.
I hear the Cleveland Stevedore Company is beginning to supply the men with their check stubs so that they know just how much they make. This needs confirmation. The hourly scales for longshoremen is $2.68 an hour. By contracting with the ILA, laborers must be hired through the union, which means calling Danny Green each evening. Men from the best union outfit show up for the jobs while the union hall has men sitting around waiting for the jobs. The only way the best labor outfit could learn about the jobs is through Danny Green. You'll be supplied with a list of laborers involved next week. So, in other words, basically, Danny is getting a heads up the night before who's showing up for work.
Yeah.
And he's going to pick the ones that he can take advantage of the easiest.
Yep.
And those are the guys that are working and not really getting paid. You know? So this guy, he's a piece of shit. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. He's a piece of shit.
True.
The editor sent another reporter to the docks to look into these claims, a man by the name of Sam Marshall. He would spend hours on the docks questioning workers. A lot of them would just kind of stare at him. Other guys would basically just straight up tell him, fuck you, leave me alone, I'm trying to work. But there were a few that would kind of sit down and talk to him. One of them says this. He's got us by the short and curlies. If we don't do what Danny told us, we might as well be invisible. Some of us work on the grain ships for no pay, and if we get upset about it, we don't get rehired. So Marshall decides to just kind of man up and go talk to Danny himself, and Danny went fucking ballistic when this reporter shows up at his office. He tells Marshall, quote, this is the work of the Italians that are disgruntled union men with an axe to grind, and they're making stuff up to my detriment. Of course, it's the Italians.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if he was blaming this on black people? Holy shit. Like, nowadays, he would have been fucking canceled and then, like, strung up on a goddamn light pole.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Fucking dead meat. Just swinging there. So I think we'll take our break here. I'll come back and finish off this fucking installment of the Danny Green saga. So Marshall published the story, and Agent McCann and Danny were equally pissed off when they both read it the following day. Federal attorneys, Jesus, they didn't send interns.
No.
No, they were too busy fucking the president. federal attorneys started
I don't think they were fucking the current president then.
You're trying to tell me Lyndon B. Johnson with his goddamn bonobo nose wasn't attractive to young people?
I don't
think I'm so. Pretty sure every president in the history of ever has fucked an intern at least once. Only one of them did it with a cigar, as far as we know.
Mm.
George Bush Jr. just fucked the entire country instead. Generations of them. you know. And the Forever War kind of did that, you know. 20 years. You know. Shit happens. Yeah.
Hey.
Then the next one just bombed a bunch of fucking weddings and countries weren't involved in. Then the next one was just kind of an idiot, and now this one's just got dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever. Yeah. He likes ice cream cones, though. Seen the pictures. Yeah. Fucking loves ice cream. Can't ride a bike to save his life, though.
Whatever.
Fell right off of that son of a bitch.
It happens.
Also kept fucking classified documents in the garage next to his car. And that's not a big deal. Not a big deal. Whatever. They're in my locked garage with my car. But, you know, when...
Hey. Then our former vice president fucking had documents and...
Yeah. They all take classified shit. They all fucking do it. They all have.
Yeah. I mean...
And it's only become
started with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, then she...
So they were... She started a trend...
I can hear them. They're on the roof. Stop it.
She started the trend and everybody was like, oh my God, I want to be like Hillary. Yay!
Ugh, fucking pantsuits and killing people. What a scumbag.
Hey. Watch out.
Okay.
They might come after you.
Yeah, they probably will. But... I'm pretty sure the Clinton administration assassins have more important people to kill than me. So, I mean, I'm not worried about it.
You never know.
But
anyway, back to Mr. Green and his worrisome woes of because his shit just got put out to the public that he's a scumbag.
Well, at this point in time, it's all speculation that he's a scumbag, right? So, federal attorneys start a full-blown investigation into the docs, and more importantly, the head of the 1317, Danny Green, obviously, and Thomas Gleason, who is the national president of the ILA. He is not involved with this at all, okay? And he catches wind of this and lost his fucking mind. The September 15th, 1961 edition of the Toledo Blade had a snippet involving Gleason. Thomas Gleason said last night in New York that he ordered an inquiry after reading published reports of some complaints by members of the Longshoremen's Local 1317, and they were forced to contribute to the union's building fund. Mr. Gleason also said he received a petition signed by 92 local 1317 members, demanding that their union be placed in trusteeship immediately, so that we can hold a, quote, free election for the leadership of our choice. These are the guys that a couple of years ago voted for Danny Green to take over as the head of the union, the head of the local.
Yeah.
And now they're like, oh, we fucked up. We fucked up big time. The descendant union members also asked Mr. Gleason to handle the investigation of union funds and to make an accounting of money members were allegedly pressured into giving the union by working without pay on grain unloading jobs. Daniel Green, local president, has denied any member was forced to contribute to the building fund and said donations were voluntary, including, you know, the tickets for the raffle, that if you don't give me the money for them, I'm going to send my boys out and they're going to smash your feet.
I mean, that's voluntary.
Yeah. It's voluntary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's more like voluntold, but whatever.
He blamed the investigation on descendant members of the union opposed to the takeover of the union in 1961.
Sons of bitches, they fucking had it out for me since fucking day one.
Yeah, bastards. Motherfuckers, goddamn Italians, it's all them. Even though it's the black guys that you're treating like dog shit and the fucking dumb white dudes that can't read, you know. You're treating them all like shit.
Stop.
But, you know, it's the Italians. It's all their fault. Fucking Italian world order.
You know it.
You know. You gotta blame Big Italy, for this one.
You fucking goddamn bastards.
So now the government is clearly onto him. He gets served a subpoena to bring all of his financial records for the 1317 to a meeting. And not long into this investigation, it's pretty obvious that he has done exactly the opposite of that. He's only brought some stuff. I picture him like showing up to this meeting with like a fucking shoebox full of receipts, you know, like he's just some bum getting fucking audited by the IRS. He's like, no, this one's for gas. This one's for potato chips. This one's for a car payment that I...
I lost the rest.
Yeah. I don't know where the rest of them are.
My dog ate them.
Yeah. So, the investigators got a warrant, and they raided his home and his office, and they found some paperwork that Danny had forgotten to bring with him. Slipped his mind, you know. They were in the garage next to his car. Locked up, though. You know. But, so it seems that he himself may have forgotten to pay contributions to the welfare system, and it also seems like he maybe forgot to pay his taxes a little bit. Slightly forgot to pay his taxes. They also found something a little odd that, you know, during the renovation of the headquarters, Danny had a series of microphones hidden in the walls and ceilings. No room was off limits. They were in the hallways, the lunchroom, the break room where guys are drinking coffee, the bathroom where guys are taking a shit. And they were all linked back to a hidden tape recorder in his office that was in a hidden panel right next to the JFK bust that we talked about last week. They opened up this panel and they found a tape recorder and just fucking stacks of cassettes. Or whatever they were using. I think it was cassettes at that point. I don't think he could record onto an 8-track. But just cassettes and fucking piles of recordings.
Well, not at that point. They didn't have cassettes. They had...
Reel-to-reel or something. I don't know. But yeah, they found piles of them. Of just recordings of people in... Just talking. Which is why it seemed like when these guys would come to ask him a question, like he was a goddamn psychic. Like you just read their mind. Because he was listening to everything that was being said in the building. So he also went to visit his attorney's office, trying to, you know, square away the heaps of evidence. When a car crept slowly past his home in the Cleveland suburb of Willoughby, and a pair of gunmen opened fire on his house. Dozens of rounds punched through the siding and windows, ripping the house apart. His wife and two daughters were inside when this happened. Ooh. But thankfully, they were unharmed. So... Message sent, message received, kind of, maybe, you know. So after this incident, he would resign from the local 1317 on September 13th, which was also the day after. It was the day after he was suspended from participating in any union activities. So he kind of was already out, but now he's made it official that he's out.
Yeah.
The legal system kind of did its thing, make the process as slow and convoluted as possible. 2 years later, Danny Green would be convicted on 3 counts of embezzlement and 2 of falsifying records. Here's the thing, though. This was Danny's first criminal offense, so his 5-year sentence is suspended. Doesn't spend a goddamn day in jail.
Yeah.
Okay. He was a bad boy. This is the first time, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
But he's also banned from any union-related activities.
Ooh.
Within a few days of being ousted by the union, he starts a company called Emerald Industrial Relations. Pay attention to this, though.
Okay.
He specialized in, quote, protecting against union discord, supply problems, and work stoppages. So basically, he made a company of strikebreakers. So you got work stoppages? I got some guys that'll come in and unstoppage the work.
So the new form of Pinkertons.
No, this was basically I own thugs that will come in and beat the shit out of guys until they get back to work.
Pinkertons?
No, the Pinkertons were law enforcement.
No, they were hired guns.
Yes, at the very beginning, that's true.
They were hired guns.
Yeah.
They were fucking, well.
They were strikebreakers.
Yeah.
But then they turned into semi-legitimate law enforcement.
Well, they were strikebreakers, but they were also, because the union back then, when they first started, was not fucking liked. So they were like, you know, fuck you, you're trying to start a union?
But they also weren't corrupt like they are at this point.
I don't know about that.
They weren't as corrupt, we should say.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, he would do all of this stuff for a price, obviously, you know?
Well, of course.
So he's got no money in his accounts because they were all frozen by the Fed. So he's in need of some startup capital for this whole thing. He goes into business with Uncle Frank Brancato. who himself is a former stevedore, former dock worker, and more importantly, he's in tight with John Scalish, who is the godfather of Cleveland. So he's, I don't know if he actually would have had a rank, but if he said something to John, it was at least listened to.
Okay.
It wasn't like, you know, I'll take it into consideration and you just never forget it. You never think about it again. His word carried weight with John.
Yeah.
You know? So Danny's first client for this new little business venture is the Cleveland Solid Waste Trade Guild, which is a super churched up way to say the trash union, trash collectors union. These are the dudes picking up your garbage, running dump trucks, garbage trucks, all that stuff. So at the meeting with the higher-ups of the union, which he wasn't supposed to be involved with, obviously, he tells the members, quote, "If others don't join us, we'll follow their trucks and take away their stops. Offer to pick up for less, take away their business at the cheapest price, and knock them out of the box. There are a lot of ways we can do this, and then we'll split up all the stops and give it to the guild members." By 1964, Danny's gotten in with an old-time Jewish mobster by the name of Shandor Burns also. From the very little that I read about this guy, we could also cover him at some point because he did some weird shit. Because a lot of people, when a lot of people don't realize that the Jewish mafia was a thing, and they were fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Like, Murder, Inc. was the Jewish mafia.
Yeah.
They were nasty.
Yeah.
They didn't fuck around.
No.
You know?
We talked about a couple of them.
A couple of them, yeah. But there's a lot of them that we can't.
Well, I'm sorry. We didn't talk about them. We mentioned them.
Right.
I'm sorry. You know, set the record straight.
Right.
You know, I didn't actually, like, go into detail about those fucks because I think we said we were going to have to go into detail on those fucking sadistic bastards.
These are the dudes that if they hadn't left, you know, the old country when Hitler took over, they'd have fucked him up. Because they would have organized, they would have armed, and they wouldn't have taken shit from nobody. Would they have probably died? Yeah. Would they have taken a bunch of Nazis with them?
Well, if their parents hadn't, because they were born here.
Still. They had the acumen and mentality to do that exactly. They'd have been like, nah. We're not going to fuck this guy in his stupid mustache.
Yeah.
You know? So they spent a lot of time hanging out at the theatrical bar. Burns, for the most part, saw a lot of himself as a younger man in Danny Green. He's smart. He's formidable. He's tough. He can hold his own. Doesn't take shit from anybody. He sees a lot of himself there.
Mm-hmm.
So Burns turned some of his business ventures over to Danny, mostly in the black neighborhoods, collecting money and then putting it back out into the streets, you know, loan sharking. We've been over loan sharking a time or two with the Westies. So he started making really, really good money, considering what he's getting and then putting back out. He's putting out between 5 and 25% interest.
Hmm.
25% is fucking unheard of when it comes to loan sharking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the kind of money that if you don't get it back, they don't send a guy over to slap you around. They send a guy over to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of money. So in 1967, Burns gets hemmed up for bribing a police officer. Keep in mind, he's in his 50s at this point. So he's an old man in a young man's game.
Yeah.
Then that police officer also showed up to be the chief witness against him in court for the case. So aside from that, the IRS also kind of DP'd him here with the charges of, quote, underreporting assets. Basically, anytime you're associated with the mafia, the IRS is going to come in and be like, well, you didn't pay us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which, the IRS should be fucking dissolved. All of them, individually, in vats of acid.
Yeah.
Scumbags. So instead of trying to fight the charges, because he knew he's not going anywhere. He's fucked. He's done. So he just pleads guilty, and he's sent off to the Atlanta Federal Prison on tax evasion. And this left all of Burns' holdings for loan sharking and all that stuff to Danny.
Yeah.
So he's just like, oh shit, I'm going to be making some money here. So 1971, Burns somehow makes parole on his first attempt. I wonder how that happened.
I don't know.
Palms were greased. I would assume. Money changed hands.
Listen, there's no proof of it.
You know? And I'm not saying that because he's Jewish. I'm saying that because he's in the mafia, okay? Before anybody goes, wait a minute. No, no, no. It's because he's in the mafia.
I wasn't saying
no, but other people would go, wait, well, you're trying to say Jewish people bribe people? No, people in the fucking mafia bribe people.
People in fucking in that world.
It doesn't matter what color mafia or fucking religious mafia you're in.
Oh, fuck no.
People get bribed.
Yeah.
You know?
Of
course. Except maybe the Yakuza. I think they may just kill you instead. Or the Triad, they might just kill you.
Nah, they still bribe you.
Yeah, probably.
I think they're still.
I don't know enough about the, Asian organized crime, but I want to learn more about it because they're fucking scary.
You gotta watch. There's a show.
There was a couple episodes of Gangland on one of the guys, head of a triad in San Francisco, and
you gotta watch.
Fuck.
There's a show on HBO Max that has to deal with kind of like the beginnings of triad ish. It's like there's like Chinese groups or whatever.
Yep. Tongs.
That they're like trying to get control. I think it's from San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's like the racism in there is fucking like brutal.
Yeah.
Like it's not only racism between whites and Chinese. It's also Chinese and Chinese.
Yeah. You want to see people be racist? Put them in a group of their own people. For reals. Because, like, well, black people can't be racist to black people. Have you ever heard black people, like darker-toned black people talk about light-skinned black people? They are fucking awful.
The prejudice is real.
Yeah, and then you get, like, the Chinese and the Japanese, which they, you know, fucking traditionally have not gotten along. You put them together, they don't like each other.
No.
Then you mix the Koreans in, who don't like fucking either one of them. And then you have the highest class of Korean, which is the roof Korean. And they are to be held with esteem because the roof Koreans are fantastic. The LA riots, like, these are the dudes that went up there with, like, fucking mini 14s and cartons of cigarettes. They're like, oh, no, you ain't robbing my store, motherfucker. And they're just, like, shooting at people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, dude, roof Koreans are the best Americans that have ever been made.
Uh-huh.
You know, they came here as immigrants. They did everything the right way. Good people. Good people. Hey. We should all be roof Koreans inside a little bit.
Okay.
Especially in trying times that we're going to be coming into, I think, in our country, we should all have a little roof Korean in us.
Okay.
You know, whether you be white, black, Hispanic, possibly even Korean, we should all have a little roof Korean in us. Just throwing that out there. Be the best you can be. 1971, again, Burns makes parole, ends up back in Cleveland, surprisingly. Why the fuck wouldn't he go home? So in between parole meetings, he makes his way back down to the theatrical for beers and shit wherever he can. And he meets back up with Danny Green. They reconnect. And they're always talking business. They're never just shooting the shit, having fun. They sit down to talk. It's all business.
Yeah.
And one of these talks found Burns telling Danny that there was a customer that wasn't paying up and a message needs to be sent. And he thinks Danny's the guy to do it. He tells him, you know, I don't want him dead. So fucking leave your hands at home. Don't shoot him. None of that. I got a guy you're going to go talk to. And this guy he goes and talks to hands him a goddamn bomb. A live, active bomb. Like an old cartoony bomb that all you have to do is light the fucking fuse on and throw it. Okay? So Danny parks his car about a block down the road from the Target's house. He's got this bomb sitting on the bench seat next to him in his caddy. He has absolutely no experience whatsoever with explosives, even though he did spend time in the Marine Corps. But that was more shooting guns and fighting people, you know, boxing, stuff like that. So he's not real comfortable with the idea of explosives. So he readies himself, starts the car, starts driving along down the road, steps on the gas to pick up some speed. Game plan here is to light the fuse and just hurl it out the window at the guy's house. If it lands on his lawn and blows his fucking Kentucky bluegrass hybrid off, he's going to be pissed because now he's got shit to mow around.
Uh-huh.
If it hits his house and blows his siding off, good. Fuck him because we got a union for that.
Uh-huh.
What we don't have a union for is is the fact that Danny didn't realize that the fuse is going to burn as quickly as it was going to.
Uh-huh.
So as he's driving, he lights the fuse, and it just starts taking off on him. And he decides, shit, I got to get this thing out of the car before I kill myself. So he tosses it towards the open passenger side window, where it promptly bounces off the inner frame of the car, bounces off the seat, and lands directly in Danny's crotch. Okay. So he's now wrestling with the bomb and the door handle at the same time. And just in the nick of time, I don't think you could have fucking timed it any better for a movie. He opens the door, falls out, rolls away from the car, and the bomb rolls back in and goes off. So he's next to the car when this thing goes off. The concussion of the blast ruptures his right eardrum, which will affect his hearing for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And he is covered in road rash and scrapes and fucking burns and shit. And when the police arrive, because, you know, there's just a car exploded in a residential area, which not fucking real common in Cleveland at that point in time. Probably still not, I wouldn't imagine. This isn't Columbia. So the police arrive, and Danny tells him that he is, in fact, the victim of a drive-by car bombing. Yes, a drive-by car bombing. Someone drove by like a goddamn Looney Tunes character and just tossed a bomb into his car. Fucking kids. You know, and then he tells the police, of course, the only thing that saved his life was the luck of the Irish.
Oh, of course.
We got to tell everybody how goddamn Irish we are.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
fucking white people. I'm telling you.
His horseshoe was, you know.
Yeah, definitely. He's got a horseshoe kicked right up his ass, you know.
Yeah.
So after almost blowing himself up, that doesn't stop him. He continues with the union. He gets back in with Frank Brancato. Brancato brought him in and makes him responsible for bringing in new union members of this trash collectors guild. Okay. And he'd also bring in a guy named Art Sneppinger, who was to basically be Danny's right-hand man in this whole thing. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So whenever new members refused to join, Danny would send Art out to deal with them. You know, we're going to use your words first. We're going to go out and talk to them. You know? Like, listen, maybe it is for the best that you join this union. And when they would refuse, he would just wait till everybody was gone. He'd sneak back at night and he'd blow their trucks up. Okay. So in one case, a guy named Mike Fratto, he joins this union. This guy is a father of 14 kids with three different wives. But from what everybody has said, generally a good-spirited guy. Nobody had a bad thing to say about this guy.
And he likes to fuck.
Dude, he couldn't pull out of a driveway.
No.
14 kids. You know, if he wasn't so clearly Catholic, I would say he was a Mormon. But, you know, that's not how that works.
Wow.
So he's in the union for a little while until guys like Danny Green get involved, at which point he leaves and, you know, he would later tell a reporter, "The guild was a beautiful thing at first, but then the wrong people took control, and I didn't need that anymore." Makes sense. You don't need to be involved with this bullshit. Get out.
Yeah.
So this is a terrible fucking idea, telling a newspaper reporter this. So Danny sent his personal bomber out to take care of Fratto, and Sneppinger had really mixed feelings about this hit, because he had actually become friends with Mike, because he's just that kind of guy where you can't not like him.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're not talking to him, you walk by and he's talking, shooting the shit, laughing, and he would just kind of like, it would bring your mood up a little bit just walking by and hearing him talk to other people.
Yeah.
Good dude. So Sneppinger plants a bomb on the bottom of a Big Mike's car one night. As he's walking back to his car, he has a change of heart. He returns and removes the explosives from the vehicle. He then goes a step further and goes to a payphone, calls Mike and says, "Hey, buddy, it's Art. Just want to let you know that I planted a bomb in your car, but I went back and took it off. Okay? We're good. Danny Green sent me out here to do this." So, at this point in time, after he has opened his mouth, Art Sneppinger just goes, "I'm probably dead, so I'm done." So he leaves the guild. He's not going to leave Cleveland, though, But he does move into a new place, and he leaves his wife and three kids on their own to fend for themselves because, you know, fuck him, pretty much.
I mean...
Because he knew that if he had ever gotten into another room with Danny Green, he's done.
Yeah.
He's toast because he fucked up.
Uh-huh.
He didn't do what he was supposed to do, and then he told the man he was supposed to kill who sent him to kill him.
Yeah.
Pretty bad idea. Pretty not smart move.
No. Most definitely not a smart move on his part.
But the thing is, Danny wasn't really in any rush for payback. He's a very patient man.
Well, that's nice of him.
So within a few weeks of the bombing campaign starting, our buddy from last week, Detective Kovacic, gets a tip that Snepinger's his guy. So send some guys out. They find him. He's just walking down the street, smoking a cigarette, going to get a sandwich. Who the fuck knows? And they bring him back
sipping
to the station.
Some gin and juice.
I don't know. I don't know. I still think
laid back.
No, I still think drinking in public was frowned upon back then.
With his mind on his money.
No, he didn't have any money.
Money on
he
his
mind. He fucked up, so he didn't have any money.
Sorry, I
know you because you're old and you fucking know all the Snoop Dogg lyrics.
Suck my ass.
I do too, though. It's okay. So they bring him back to, you know, sit down, have a little chat with the detective.
Today, Junior.
Turns out Art Snepinger was a better bomb builder and blower upper of things than he was a secret keeper.
Uh-huh.
Because he spilled his guts almost immediately to the detective.
Like, all right, I did it, goddammit!
Like, from what I read, he asked the detective for a cigarette. He went out to the fucking cigarette machine in the police department because, yes, that was a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
Bought him a pack of smokes, brought him back in a book of matches, tossed him on the table, and he goes, okay, let's talk. Fucking rats Danny Green out for 20 cigarettes.
Yeah. I remember fucking cigarette machines.
Dude, fucking JR's down here used to have one when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because he used to buy Hermes cigarettes while we were having breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to play with the machine, so he'd give me the money, I'd go over and put all the change in. Fucking... hit his Camel Unfiltereds, and
yep. Whew,
man, those are fucking rough.
I remember those fucking things.
So he tells him everything that he knows of that Danny Green is involved in. All the stuff with the union, all the below board shit that's going on, and to the surprise of the detective, finds out that Danny's a rat for the FBI.
Oh.
Probably not something you should be telling people you work with, like, especially if you're in an illegal enterprise. Be like, no, don't worry about it. I'm a rat.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. You imagine if a fucking biker did that? Tell one of his buddies, like, no. I'm working for the ATF. Don't worry. They would find him headless in the desert somewhere. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So the police turn him loose, and I'm not sure if they thought they could maybe get more out of him if they let him go back and talk to Danny some more. Or if they didn't want to show their hand that we've brought him in. So they let him go that same day after they got everything they could out of him. Then on October 31st of 1971, Danny calls Snepinger to a meeting and he told him that he wanted the job done and he wanted it done right this time. He's like, you go kill Big Mike and we're square. Fresh, you know, fresh start. Everything off the board, we're good.
Yep.
So aside from the trash hauling business, Frato was also the co-owner of the Swans gas station in the Coventry Village area of Cleveland. So at around 1 a.m. on November 1st, a massive explosion rocks the area of the gas station.
No way.
When the police arrived, they found a smoldering corpse under a bunch of heavy debris about 10 feet from the east side of the gas station. The body did not belong to Mike Frato, whatever the fuck it is.
Uh-huh.
But it was that of Art Snepinger. It seems that he maybe had a bit of a slip up and kind of blew his payload prematurely. It turns out that Mike wasn't even there when the bomb went off. There was somebody working there, but it wasn't Mike, and they weren't hurt. So during canvassing of the area, more than one person witnessed a Lincoln, a Kelly Green Lincoln to be exact, leaving the area of the explosion with a quickness not too long after it went off. So one of the theories here is that Danny supplied Art with the explosives. Said, go do it. We'll get this squared away. We're all good.
Uh-huh.
Let him go. So one of the theories, that theory continues to go, he gave him a fake detonator, and then he just sat back and waited until he had everybody in place where he wanted them. He drove by and hit the button, took Art out himself. So that's where we're going to end this week's installment of Danny Green. And we're going to come back with his well-earned demise, I'm going to say, because he's kind of an asshole.
Huh.
You know, we've talked about some assholes on here, and he's definitely one of them.
Oh.
So that first little shooting at his house was the first attempt on his life. It wouldn't be the last.
Yeah.
But next week, I'm going to kind of... I want to just try to generalize it because there's so much information that I could do like 8 parts on this, but we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to kind of vague out some more of the details and just talk about mostly the attempts that were made on his life and go from there.
Okay.
So having a lot of fun with this one though. Nice. I really,
yeah.
It's
interesting.
Yeah. Because it's a guy that started off as fucking nothing.
Yeah.
And he's now mobbed up.
Yep.
You know,
for sure. And
it's very interesting to see where he came from and where he ends up. So, but I think we're going to, like, again, we're going to call it here.
Okay.
Record cool. Patreon.
All right. And, head on over to your, you know, social media stuff, Facebook, Dark Windows Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, Dark Windows Pod. Also head on over to studio.com. Yep. Check them out. They have headphones, earbuds, Bluetooth speaker. Find what you want. Put in your basket. Put the promo code of DarkWindows15 in at checkout to get 15% off your entire purchase. And as Kevin mentioned earlier, a little slip
Patreon.
Up.
Patreon.com. Was it a slip up? I don't slip up shit.
You did.
That was slip done up. Intentionally.
Oh, okay.
It's tactically inserted.
Ah.
Just like.
Just go over to Patreon.com/DarkWindowsPodcast.
Well, fuck you then.
And enjoy. And, you know, get another free episode each week.
It's not free. You pay for it.
Well, I'm sorry. You have to pay for it. $5 get you another free episode.
Yeah.
And you can possibly listen to more asshole stuff or you listen to us ramble sometimes.
Yeah. We do ramble a lot.
Happens. Yeah. So, yep. Yeah.
So, with that being said.
With that being said.
Just because you can't see out into the dark doesn't mean the dark can't see into you.
Bye.
And we'll be back with more Irish car bombs next week.
Ooh,
we should do some for that. Oh, they're so bad, though.
Yeah.
We got to do one.
No.
We got to do one.
I'm not going to do it.
Oh, you pussy.